Okay, so we're diving into Sherman Migalovsky, right? This 1963 case, super interesting. It's all about this piece of land in Rhode Island. They call it the Potter Lot. We've got a lot to work with here. Detailed notes, legal analysis, a good case brief, laying out all the key points. And I guess our mission today is, well, figuring out who the court said owned the land, but more than that, like why? So we're going to get into property law, this idea of adverse possession, how someone can claim land that's not officially theirs, at least not on paper. We'll unpack what went down, the arguments, the court's reasoning. Hopefully by the end, you'll really get this case.
You know, what strikes me about Sherman v. Golosky is that it's from 1963, but it still perfectly illustrates this huge tension in property law. It's like, how much weight do we give to a deed, that official document, versus someone actually using the land for years? It gets to the heart of some core principles, stuff that still matters a lot in property law today.
Totally. So let's take it back to 1963, right? We're in Rhode Island, and boom, two lawsuits pop up about this Potter Lot, which is by this Ponegansett Reservoir. We've got Grover Sherman. He's waiving a deed from 1959 saying, "Hey, this is my land." He actually starts the whole thing by suing Theodore Golosky for trespassing.
And Golosky doesn't just back down. He hits back with his own claim, a counterclaim, saying he's the rightful owner. And his argument is based on this legal concept of adverse possession. Right off the bat, it's like deed versus decades of use. Who wins?
And round one goes to Sherman. The trial court looks at everything and sides with the deed. They say, "Yep, that's your proof. Sorry, Golosky. Adverse possession not working here." But this isn't over yet, right?
Nope. Golosky's not done. He appeals, takes it up to the Rhode Island Supreme Court, hoping they'll overturn the trial court. But no dice. The Supreme Court affirms the lower court's decision, says, "Sherman, the Potter Lot's yours."
So the big question, the core of it all, is who had the right to the Potter Lot? Seems simple with a deed, but Golosky really muddies the waters.
Yeah, and the court really emphasizes this point. They say, "Look, Sherman's claim rests on this 1959 deed. It's clear, describes the Potter Lot specifically, no question what land it refers to." And the court even points out that Golosky doesn't even try to say the deed itself is bogus. So, starting point.
Yeah.
Record ownership. That deed. It's strong. It's what the system prefers, you know? Clarity avoids messy disputes.
Right. Sherman's got the paper, the proof. But then there's Golosky's argument, adverse possession. I'm no legal expert, but explain this to me. It almost sounds like you can legally steal someone's land just by using it, but I know it's got to be more complex than that. Oh, way more complex.
Yeah.
Adverse possession is this legal idea, right?
Yeah.
Someone can gain ownership of property, even if it's not theirs on paper, by using it openly, continuously, and without the owner's permission for a set period of time. And Rhode Island. They've got a strict checklist.
Yes.
Six things you got to prove.
Six things. Okay, lay it on me. What's on this checklist? So buckle up. First, actual possession. You got to have physical control of the property. Second, it has to be open. Your use can't be hidden. Third, notorious. People know you're using it. Like, it's so obvious the owner should be aware. Fourth, hostile. Now, this doesn't mean a fist fight. It means you're using the land without permission, acting like you own it. Fifth, continuous, no breaks for the whole time period, which in Rhode Island back then was 10 years. And sixth, exclusive, you're not sharing possession with the owner or anyone else in a way that contradicts your ownership.
10 years. That's a long time to be doing all that stuff. So what did Golosky say he did for all those years? He claimed to have been using the land for ages, right?
Yeah, Golosky's like, "Look, I've been hunting, logging, even built a cabin on this land." You know, typical stuff an owner would do.
But it sounds like the court wasn't convinced these actions were enough for him to claim adverse possession of the Potter Lot specifically.
Exactly. That's the key. The court digs into his evidence, and it's just not consistent enough. Like, witnesses disagree on how often he used the Potter Lot itself, the exact spot being argued over. This just shows how important clear, specific evidence is. Can't be fuzzy, can't be about the general area, has to be about that precise property.
Makes sense. You can't just be scrolling through the woods and be like, "Oh, this whole area is mine now."
Yeah.
And you mentioned the land itself is important. It was rural, undeveloped woodland. How did that play into what the court was looking for?
Huge point. The court was smart. They knew possession looks different depending on the land. For rural woodland, they'd expect stuff like regular logging, actively managing the trees, consistent use that screams ownership. Golosky, his use seemed more sporadic, like you said, focused around the Potter Lot, not consistently on it. That hurt his claim a lot.
And it's not just what he did, but how often and how openly, right? I remember reading that the trial judge wasn't even sure Golosky was being totally truthful.
Yeah.
One witness even said his use was basically just occasional picnics. That's a far cry from someone actively claiming and using the land like an owner. Like occasional picnics.
Mm-hmm.
How's that fit with hostile and exclusive possession?
Exactly. That trial judge, he saw the witnesses, heard them firsthand, and he wasn't buying it. Occasional picnics? Come on, that doesn't scream, I'm excluding the owner, this is mine. It just doesn't match the level of continuous hostile possession needed for adverse possession to stick.
So in the end, why did the Supreme Court agree with the trial court and say, Golosky, your claim's not good enough?
Well, they do this thing called deference, meaning they give a lot of weight to the trial court's judgment, especially on things like, hey, were these witnesses believable? And remember, the trial court found Golosky's evidence, well, it just wasn't strong enough to meet that high bar for adverse possession. The Supreme Court agreed. Golosky, they basically said, your evidence is not clear and positive enough to beat Sherman's deed.
And we got to emphasize that point about adverse possession not being partial. Even if Golosky proved he was all over the land next to the Potter lot, that wouldn't automatically give him the Potter lot, too. It's got to be specific, right?
Absolutely. And the court was crystal clear on that. They're not going to lump parcels together. Golosky had to show, with strong evidence, that he possessed the Potter lot itself, meeting all those requirements. Whatever he did on nearby land, even if it was adverse possession, which it wasn't, wouldn't just spill over. Each piece of land is treated as its own thing when you're talking about adverse possession.
I see. Okay. And the court even brought up another case, Davy Swan Point Cemetery, to really drive this point home. What were they getting at with that reference?
By mentioning Davy Swan Point Cemetery, they were like, look, adverse possession is a big deal. You can't just waltz in and claim land. It demands rock solid proof, no room for doubt. It's on the person making the claim to show they check every box for the whole time period. And for rural land, as we've talked about, those actions have to be what a normal owner would do. Golosky's casual use, it didn't cut it. It wasn't the kind of constant, obvious activity that put an owner on notice, like, hey, someone's trying to take my land.
Right. Makes sense. Okay, let's do a quick recap. For everyone listening, Rhode Island's adverse possession test, what was it again?
All right, rapid fire. One, actual possession, Golosky physically controlling the Potter lot. Two, open and notorious. His use so visible, any reasonable owner like Sherman wouldn't notice. Three, hostile. Him using it without permission, aiming to claim it as his own. Four, continuous, uninterrupted use for that whole 10-year stretch. Five, exclusive. Him using it, not sharing with Sherman or the public in a way that weakens his claim.
And when it came to the Potter lot itself, where did Golosky's claim stumble the most?
Those open and notorious, hostile, and continuous elements, those were his weakest points. He might have done stuff around the area, but his actions on the Potter lot weren't consistent enough to prove those things to the court's satisfaction.
Okay, so big takeaways from our deep dive into Sherman v. Golosky.
Mm-hmm.
What are the most important things to walk away with?
The big one. Having that clear title, a deed, that's your strongest argument for ownership. You need a ton of solid evidence to overturn that with an adverse possession claim. Adverse possession is a way to transfer ownership, but it's like the exception, not the rule.
Number two, the law focuses on the exact piece of land in question. You can't say, I use this land over here, so I own that land over there, even if they're next to each other. Each parcel needs its own proof, meeting all those requirements for that specific land.
And last but not least, that burden of proof for adverse possession, it's sky high. You need clear and convincing evidence, way stronger than just more likely than not. Conflicting stories, actions that aren't constant and obvious, your claim's in trouble.
So what does all this mean for you, our listeners? Sherman v. Golosky shows us just how complex property law can be, especially when you're talking about adverse possession. It shows the importance of having your ownership documented, that clear title, and how courts really zoom in on the specifics of the case. Think about it. What actions truly say, I own this? Does it change depending on the type of land? How crucial is it to be consistent over time? And how much does the judge's firsthand view of the witnesses matter? This case, it's like a window into how these legal ideas play out in real life. Hopefully you've got a better sense now how strong a deed is and how tough it can be to claim land through adverse possession. So now I'm curious, what other land disputes out there might show us these same legal principles in action?